and welcome to the Weekly Scroll Podcast. My name is Ryan.
And I am the Beetle King from the Coconut Estate.
And with us today, we have a special guest. That is Jim Hall of Brooklyn Games. How are you doing today, Jim?
Hey, I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you.
Very nice to have you on. Yeah. So what we have, well, you can see above me. Well, you can't, but people out there can see above me. You're currently funding a project right now called Beetle Knight on Kickstarter for Zine Quest. But before we get into that, I've seen your books everywhere, your zines everywhere. They're very colorful. They're very hard to miss. What are some of the projects that people who might not know Brooklyn Games know some of your work from?
The most recent Kickstarter was something called Worldlings. And it's kind of based on this amazing art from this artist, Okro. She's fantastic. But it's a world building book that gives you these tiny little gods to sprinkle around the wilderness and add some sort of animistic spirits to your world. So you can really sprinkle it into any system, but it's written for Karen and 5e. I've got a bunch of books or pamphlets out, but the other one that most people know me from is Escape the City. Oh, hey, yeah, you got Thorn from Fallen Kickstarter. But Escape the City is a pretty popular one. It got picked up by a lot of or a few solo YouTubers. It's like you draw cards to build out a city as you play, and then you can explore that way. And it's kind of a test to see if you can survive to escape. Those are the big ones. I've been writing and publishing since probably 2021. COVID, made me start putting stuff out there. I also illustrate, and so my big kind of achievement recently was doing the map for Barkeep on the Borderland. W.F. Smith Warren, he was really great and gave all the contributors an any medal. And so I have an any, even though it was, just did the map, but still pretty cool.
The illustrations work is fantastic. I actually have Graves and Groves that you did the cover for. That it's a DCC module, which is absolutely stunning, so I love that. The cover, it was the first thing I saw. I was like, damn, I gotta go back this now. And then it was a great project too, but that's another thing you've done that we've seen that it's fantastic.
There's a few other things. I had a adventure in Knock issue 3 called Titan Cliffs. It's a really nice one shot if you want to introduce someone to sort of the old school style of play. So yeah.
A lot of the stuff you've written for, especially a lot of your zines like Escape the City, Rot Dragon, Arvin and the Rot Dragon. I know Forbidden Swamp, I think, is more system. Is that one more system neutral? But a lot of stuff you write for is Karen and 5e.
Yeah. So the very first thing that I put out there was, you can't even get it on Itch. Actually, it's only on Patreon. But it was a 5e adventure. So I started off with fifth edition, really. I played a little bit of 3.5 back in college, but really fifth edition was the one that got me hooked. Then I discovered Knave, and eventually I discovered Cairn. And I fell in love with Cairn. It's just so simple. We talked a little bit before the show about it. It's, you can do a lot with it because it's so boiled down. I'm putting out these adventures. I'm testing them with my local group that, we play in person here. I figured I'll write it for this system that I'm really excited about, Cairn. I'll also write it for fifth edition. You get sort of a wider audience, and that's what my local group was playing. So yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, 5e is always going to be a pretty wide audience, I guess. It's not going anywhere.
But hey, until one D&D comes out, you know.
But it's supposed to be compatible, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, Forbidden Swamp actually I put out as a Cairn exclusive, and so you can go over to the Cairn store and pick that one up. But yeah, I also did one with Perplexing Ruins where he did all the art, and it's called The Visitor. And it's just like some random tables that help you create some pretty weird alien encounters. It will explicitly take your fantasy world into a multi-dimensional outer space style of play. So anyway,
I do love that. I like my fantasy weird, and sometimes mixed with some science. So yeah, weird extra dimensional travelers, great. And also just like the visitor, like the vibes from like the art from PR's art, very 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 cool.
Yeah.
Ryan's looking for a booklet right now.
And yeah, I know I have The Visitor right next to me and I can't find it. It's in here somewhere. Oh, there it is.
Woo! I knew it.
I found it. I was like, I know roughly where it is. Yeah, this one is absolutely fantastic. Love this one.
I'm so excited that you guys actually have my stuff. And I feel like you put it out there and sometimes it's just, it just disappears. And yeah, so that's cool.
Yeah. Well, it's cool. You have I actually honestly have only like looked through your itch. I didn't realize you have like a big cartel, like digital storefront where everyone can get your zines physically. And they're really very cool. To be quite honest with you, I've read through Escape the City and I didn't realize that you did the art, but I really do like the color palette and art, in Escape the City. So
thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that cover of that has this really cool perspective, and so I was having fun with it.
Yeah, the fisheye kind of lens. Yeah.
So, you mentioned, it's been mentioned a couple times about the color, the bright colors from a lot of my covers. It's funny because with Beetle Knight, I'm actually going the opposite direction where the entire thing is all black and white. And my hope is that it's something that anyone can take and sort of print at home. Because I've had, especially with like Escape the City is the most popular thing that I have right now. And people have asked for a black and white home printer friendly edition because it's just super saturated. And
yeah,
you need a just like a black and white version. So yeah, with Beetle Knight, I wanted to make that kind of the default. So anyway.
Yeah, like the dichotomy though between like you like your ability to very effortlessly move from like this very over like saturated like ultra color to this black and white, and the black and white you're like, oh, it looks great, like it makes a lot of sense. When reading through Beetle Knight, it has that kind of like darker aesthetic, and it's still incredibly well done.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I like color, I like black and white, that's all good.
But so speaking of Beetle Knight, this is a project that you are currently funding right now on Kickstarter. It is funded just like a buck or two over goal, like 300%+ of the funding. But for those that haven't yet backed it, because they should go there and do that right now. What is Beetle Knight? Because this isn't a lot of what is on your storefront and stuff are adventures, like we said, for Cairn and 5e, some Into the Odd stuff too. But this is a game. So what is Beetle Knight?
Yeah, so this is, it's not actually the first game that I put out there, but it's the first one that really has gotten a lot of love from me. It is a game kind of inspired by Hollow Knight and a few other sort of touchstones, where you step into the claws of a arthropod knight. It could be a beetle, it could be a moth, or a lightning bug. There actually will be 20 different species that you could play. Each of the knights has a sort of motivation that makes them kind of tears them away from their normal life and sends them out into the world to try to create justice across this sort of forest floor that's covered in a bunch of different cultures of each different type of bug that you could possibly think of, and the interactions that they have. I like to think of it in terms of each sort of region of the forest floor has a history of other kind of critters that have lived there, and the people who you encounter are just the latest in a long line. And it really opens you up for that sort of delving or digging into these mysteries or magics that kind of pop up. So yeah, I mean, I think it's captured well in some of the story prompts on the second page here. Deep in the rotting log that is the millipede's fortress, a disease spreads like wildfire. No one knows the source. Perhaps they discovered something left by the termites long ago. And so this sort of thing, I don't know. I find that fun. And if you have played Hollow Knight, it's just filled with that sort of kind of open-ended storytelling that it feels like there's depth there. And so that's what I like and what I want to create in the world here.
I do really like that space that you're stepping into for storytelling, because it's like I live in Oregon. It's very forested. Like I go walk out and like look at bugs living in a small community and be like, oh, like that's a cool prompt to start a direction for a story.
I, as an adult, go into my backyard and turn rocks and logs over to look at bugs. And it's just been like that my entire life. And so, I don't know, like my logo is a slug or a snail. And if you've read some of my other stuff, like Arbonne and the Rot Dragon, you encounter bugs like ants that have been warring for a long time. So it's a theme that I've been working with in a for a while. In fact, Beetle Knight was I originally made it over 2 years ago, and it started off as a little pamphlet adventure. And I was rummaging through just before we got started here, and I actually found my little printout of the original pamphlet
Nice.
adventure. So
Nice.
this is
Love a
what
good
it's
pamphlet.
yeah, this is what it started off as. You can see I have my notes from playtesting right in there. But it grew. And I found that I wanted to do more with it. And next thing you know, we got a game here. We got a book, or a couple zines anyway.
The setting is fantastic, and I know you said it's based on Hollow Knight. From what I know of Hollow Knight, I've never played it. It's a Metroidvania with a little Souls. It's like a Soulsvania-ish, right? Or is it pure Metroidvania?
Well, you do explore a lot. Maybe the soulsness you're referring to is the extremely challenging combat. So in that way, yeah, I could see that. It involves a lot of exploration. And as you explore, there's sort of a storytelling element that emerges just by visiting places. But then also, over time, the things change in the environment, and that really sort of creates movement in the story. In terms of like the combat, it's pretty technical. There's a meme about it that's just get good, because it's just a hard game. And in that, as you're kind of working with that, you're optimizing your character, you're learning the skills really well, and you wind up in different situations having to do different builds. And so it's really cool in that way. Maybe that's not for everybody, certainly not, especially if you're like a cozy gamer. But for me, that's fun. It's crunchy.
It is cool.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things I love about it's interesting because I've read the Quick Start a bunch. It's fantastic. But when I read through it, I don't remember if it says Hollow Knight in there anywhere. But as soon as you said Hollow Knight, so much of it kind of like clicked a little bit different for me too. Because I love Metroidvanias. They are my favorite. Even though I haven't played Hollow Knight, like Blasphemous, Ori, like all those kind of games. And I love where you like you explore and then you like enter a new realm and it's like different colors and different music and things like that. Metroidvanias do that a lot. And when you read about the game section, then go right into the histories and mysteries, talking about like the realm of Litterfall, but especially that last part, it's a patchwork of territories and everything is claimed and everything. I can just imagine playing a Beetle and like going into a new territory in Beetle Knight and like the music changes a little bit and this one's like a foggy one and stuff like that. So it's really it's really interesting to kind of get those parallels in some of the writing as well.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen the anime Mushishi. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Some people have. Yeah, there you go.
If you haven't seen Mushishi, it's literally one of my favorite of all time. Like being able to see the things that some people can and some people can't see and like how they think it's just the world, but it's really this like thing on them. It's beautiful too.
Yeah, it is. And often poetic. That was inspiration in part for Worldlings, but at any rate, the main character kind of travels across the it's like a feudal Japanese, you know, countryside, kind of solving mysteries, these magical mysteries for people. And so, you know, one will be in the city, one will be in, you know, some tea house or in a swamp in the middle of the woods. And so I like that idea of a wanderer who their goal is to try to help folks. And so I don't know. That's how I see the game going about.
Nice. And so maybe we touched on this a little bit before. You showed the original adventure that it was, and you said there were playtests and everything. What was kind of the impetus? Was it just like engaging with it so much that you kept wanting to expand it into a game? But what was the impetus behind turning it from an adventure into a game and adding your own mechanics and things to it?
Actually, it was a game right from the get-go. So that little pamphlet is actually a full game, and this is the game that we played at first.
Nice.
And a lot of the same text is still in the book today. I had some ideas around mechanics. I was inspired to create a piece of art that you see on the cover. And I spent around a month doing that illustration. And so these things were happening at the same time. And I don't know, it just kind of came together where I had these ideas for a different type of mechanic, which wound up being called contests. And I needed a world to sort of, you know, populate with that mechanic or like use that mechanic to explore. And that's just kind of what happened. Also at that time, I had done a collaborative world building session with some good friends. And we came up with this really wacky world that all takes place on the back of a giant that's like swimming through an ocean of sugar water. And all the characters are like pests living on the back of this giant. And the hares are like trees and all this stuff. And so all this was happening at the same time. And I started writing the game and we switched that that giant game to playing Beetle Knight. That's when we started playing it.
So did the original Beetle Knight pamphlet use like the contest system or did it have a different like resolution system?
It used contests.
Okay.
And like the resolution system contest, you know, the way it works is you each of your abilities has a die associated with it. So you start off with like a D4, two D6s, and a D8, and you spread that around your four abilities. And then when you want to try something uncertain, you roll those die against a challenge die that the arbiter rolls. And so, you know, you want to convince the Moth Queen that the ants are not spying on her or something like that. So you would roll your presence die and the arbiter would roll some difficulty dies. So maybe it's like a D8 versus a D10 or something like that. You compare those results. If your result beats the arbiter, then you're successful. If you get a tie, you're not successful, but a new opportunity presents itself. If you miss, you miss. So that core resolution system was there from the beginning, and it's just like an idea that I had and I thought would be fun. Balancing that has been kind of tricky. And so there's because yeah, it's just been a little tricky. It's not like a nice bell curve to work with. Like you work with like D20s, and this is probably why the D20s kind of systems are so popular. It's easy to grok. And so we had to kind of go off of feel. It's like, okay, well, we'll give you plus one for that ability. How about that? And like we would do this where we'd play and it felt like nothing was hitting. And so I'd say, all right, here's a new version. Everyone gets to add plus one to one thing or something like that. So I tried a few different things, and what we have now is kind of the result of all that experimentation.
Yeah, it's a really interesting mechanic because, a lot of games are like, player facing, so GMs don't roll at all, and an arbiter, the GM rolls against everything. But and there's some other games out there that do like a kind of a standard array with like a dice, but it's really interesting to have what amounts to the word's not getting my like a mobile like D, there's no specific DC, so instead of being like this is going to be a 10 and you have to work like Ryutama, like put two together and do this or that, it's interesting that like instead of having a DC for something, the contest that you're doing is also a dice which has potentially like a different average and things like that. So it's a really interesting mechanic, and contest obviously makes sense because you're contesting like every roll, but I really like that idea of like this is my die versus your die. We might have different die and changing the die and things like that. It's a really, really interesting mechanic that definitely, like, as soon as I saw it, my brain went, I'm not good enough at math to really really dig deep enough into this, but it's fun. It seems fun.
I spent a lot of time in that dice simulation app that's online. Perhaps the one. Anyway.
Is it
Oh
any
yeah.
dice?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, I have also spent a lot of time on any dice. I mean, that seems fun. It's a fun like adversarial, and I don't mean that as a negative. Like, you can have a fun adversarial time with your arbiter or game master, but like, I think that'd be a blast to be rolling against my players and kind of be like, "Who's gonna win out on this one, man?" Are there like a lot of fun, like, I don't want to like say adversarial like a negative, but like fun rivalry moments between like the arbiter and the playtesters when you guys run it?
I would say no more than usual, I
Okay,
guess.
fair. Yeah.
A lot of times, when I've played other games, I have the screen up and I'm not rolling publicly. But for some reason with Beetle Knight, I have always played it rolling publicly. And so you see the difficulty and you see the result. And so there can be these dramatic moments where you recognize how difficult it was going to be. And even if you have like a D4, you can still beat a D12. So those can be some fun dramatic moments, I suppose, that you don't really necessarily get in other styles of play. If it's just too hard, it's too hard, right? But in theory, you could roll a D100 and beat it with a D4. So it's just
Theoretically.
probably not going to happen.
Yeah, and also, I mean, getting expertise and like an ability in Beetle Knight, which is like the plus one you were talking about, like that's like a plus one can be very meaningful to pretty much every die size. I mean, when you get to a D20, it's less meaningful, but like for a 10 or a 12 or a 4, I mean, plus one's very meaningful.
I mean, if you're rolling D6s against an enemy that has a D8 as a defense, then it's not gonna feel that you're not it's not gonna feel that great. You're gonna miss more often than you hit. You put a plus one in there, it starts feeling better. I generally speaking have not given foes those plus one modifiers, and so it's slightly in the player's favor. However, if they're a strong enemy, they'll be using those higher die higher dice. So anyway.
Yeah, but no, that's I And just the more we talk about it, the more I'm excited about it, because this is the nitty-gritty of like game design stuff that's like so like I get really excited about. Because when you look at like the dice mechanics, I mean everything has an average. But like you said, like a D100 could be beat by a D4 every now and then. So I really like this. Like a D6 more often than not is gonna lose to a D8, but it could also at any point be a massive success or massive failure. And it feels like there's a lot of like swing and an innate feeling of like difficulty, so your successes feel more successful. And I hadn't even thought when I read this that you would use a GM screen. Like it never even crossed my mind, because like with a contest roll, I would assume that like that almost makes it less adversarial, because it's just like it's not you rolling, it's the queen rolling her die, and then when you roll the two together, you see it. So it never even crossed my mind to like 5e fudge rolls or whatever like behind a screen. And that just feels cool.
There is this other aspect there where, because there's the challenge, there's this mechanic of promoting dice or demoting dice. And so you have like your array of dice, D4 through pretty much D12. It's what players will mostly play in. Let's say you're really clever and you give yourself some sort of advantage. You can promote your dice using that advantage. The arbiter will have to sort of grant you that. It makes it so you can use creativity in order to give yourself a better sort of position to play with. And it's just baked right in. So at the same time, if you're making mistakes and slipping and fumbling a whole bunch, then you can have your die demoted as well. And so, and that's also built in too. So like during combat, if you try to do, it's actually based on Pathfinder, you have three actions each round. If you try to do the same action more than once, your dice get demoted. If you try to do more than once, not the same thing more than once. And so, it's just kind of a mechanic that gets used throughout. There's again, also powers that give you that promote or demote dice for yourself or for foes. So
again, fun mathy dice bits are so interesting. Like a lot of games would just go, okay, you get advantage, now you get to roll 2d6, take the higher or whatever. I love the idea of keeping it consistent and keeping it with like the dice versus dice, and if a d8 is better than a d6, having the opportunity to roll a d8 instead of a d6 because you put yourself in a better position or something, it feels so clean and elegant. And staying within that feel where it almost has like a feel of almost like a usage die-ish feel, but as like a core mechanic where it can like promote and demote and stuff. And it feels really elegant. Like I'm really excited to sit down and actually play this and actually get in hand, just because it feels different than a lot of games that you play for a lot of the reasons we've just said. It's contested roles and everything. But again, with like the set kind of array and the options to go up and down on the dice, it just feels just interesting.
I appreciate that. I have other ideas with the system. Anyway, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. I don't know. you start playing around with a system like this, and it's like, oh, there's different ways of doing things, and all of a sudden it changes the way that you think about how you do roles. And how you like resolve things. And it kind of brings me to something here, which is this is being released under Creative Commons BY-SA 4.0. So my real like hope of like the legacy of the game is that other people will take it and do crazy stuff with it that I never had hoped of. So if you're listening to this, you know, go crazy. Tell me about it, because I want to hear about it.
I mean, a lot of games have seen a lot of like lifeblood infused into them by the Creative Commons and like this, that kind of like communal openness to like hacks and third party material. So that's, I think that's always a really great approach.
Yeah. I mean, I've taken advantage of that with Karen. So, and it's been cool. You can get kind of plugged into a community, and there's all these great Karen hacks out there now. And I don't know. Anyway, I hope people do that.
Well, it feels like a very, hackable game. Like, even just going through it, like, obviously we read a shitload of games and everything like that, so like we go through mechanics and stuff a bunch, but like there's sometimes you look at a game and go, oh, I could act the shit out of this. Like, this feels like one of those. Not only in we talked a little bit before we got on about we just played Ballista Critters the other day, and like Mouse Ritter's like one of the flavors of the year for Zine Quest and stuff. How not playing humans opens the door to like so much creativity. So like someone could easily just be like, well, I don't like bugs, so this is going to be like birds or something, and could really reskin it that way. Or the dice mechanic has so much fun math that could come out of it too. So this is definitely one of those ones where like I'm excited for this game, but I'm just as excited for like the community that could build up around it and all of like the jams and things that could come out to see it expand in interesting ways.
Yeah, I mean, if you can sort of like wrap your head around, all right, we want to be able to give players an opportunity to have a plus one here, or to be able to promote permanently some ability. Those are little knobs that you can add flavor, that you can use to add flavor. So for example, previously we just had the ability to add, you could promote one die and you give plus one to two different abilities. So that's cool. But then people started saying, hey, can I play, you know, a Firefly? What I did is I just took that same, those same kind of bonuses and spread it around the different species. And it added a lot of flavor, a lot more variety. But really under the hood, it's the same thing happening, same mechanics. So
Cool. That's one of the nice things about lighter systems is being able to just kind of use flavor to move things around, and it still feels good. One of my other favorite parts about the game is the calling. You know, one of the issues with issues, I say issues, one of the things that can come up in like OSR games is like, why am I doing this? You know what I mean? Like this world sucks. Like, why am I adventuring? Or, and this isn't like XP for gold, right? Or gold is XP. So, there's a really elegant way that you kind of fix that with this, especially with like the idea of like the knight traveling. So, what is the calling? What was kind of your impetus for like when to put that in the system?
Well, yeah, I mean, from writing a lot of adventures, there's always, I think it's always helpful to have a motivation. I mean, you just see that with adventures, if they don't have that motivation, yeah, as a game master, you can create it. But if the character has a motivation, it all of a sudden there's emotional investment. And so I wanted to get that with Beetle Knight as well. And the idea here is that as in order kind of to become a knight, you need to have lived through some really tragedy. There's just a few tables here to determine your calling, your call to knighthood. So what were you before? Then what happened? And now, because of that, what do you seek? So for example, you could perhaps before you were a Moss Light scholar, and then your world was destroyed by a killing frost. And then you seek to heal what was destroyed. And so, you know, there's a few options. And, you know, with the combination, there's a lot of different options here. And I also explicitly say, if you don't like what you get, you know, come up with your own thing. The idea here is to create a motivation. That in turn can be given to the arbiter as, you know, quest fodder, essentially. So I don't know, when I've done also like collaborative world building, you wind up creating that emotional investment over the course of the world building. And that as a game master has given me lots of tools to work with. So this just kind of builds that right in.
Yeah. So, you know, I started with 5e, like you said you did, and I feel like it was like, that was like just yesterday, but that was 10 years ago. The thing, one of the reasons that I kind of moved away from it, and this will be a point at some point, was it just felt like I didn't want to be just like a heroic, like somebody who was chosen and eventually becomes a god. And I was tired of just having to be like an OC generator where I have no danger because like you're not going to kill like this character that I wrote a 10-page backstory for. So then when you switch to OSR games or OSR style games or whatever we're calling NSR games, whatever it is now, sometimes you do feel that like I don't want to write a 10-page backstory. I like the emergence of my character in play. And having something like this where I can start the game with just like, I don't need to write a bunch of stuff. Like I can say, like, I know what I did before, I know what happened, and I know what I'm like doing now. And it's really easy to be like, all right, 3D6, all right, this is me. Let's go figure out. And like you said, having these options for like daggers that the GM can have to like stab you in the back later, like the locust swarm could be a whole adventure because they come back or something. It's so nice to be able to have that much information and on both the player and the GM side without having to have a huge backstory and without having to have a whole module or supplement that built around stuff like that. So it's really enjoyable and elegant. And I wish more games had exactly this, like a reason to be doing what you're doing.
Well, I mean, that's we talked earlier or before about Into the Odd. It's one of those ones that's just kind of built in and you just get it. You don't have to create yourself. And it may kind of force you to put yourself into shoes that you wouldn't necessarily choose yourself or couldn't actually even create yourself because you're not that person, you know, like it's nice to be able to kind of let go of the reins and see what you get. But you know, that with fifth edition, one thing that I do kind of like is the personal investment. But with OSR style games, being able to spin up a character in just 15 minutes, it's so appealing. I don't know. You
Yeah,
sit down at the table and you just start playing, right?
there is something nice about like, yeah, it's like instead of having an hour session where I make a character, or I think I'm probably much quicker than that now, but a lot of people aren't. It's like, no, just re-roll, you know? Like, I mean, we were playing Bastards for a while at my table, and it's like two dice rolls and your three dice rolls and your character's made. And I don't know. I do understand like that implicit narrative that the player character creates themselves for 5e and like that being cool for buy-in. But like I am much more this like that emergence narrative. But I do like having like the night calling like a before then and seeks like that's as much information as I want about my own character and that'll carry a long way, you know?
And something else though that came up in this conversation is getting godlike powers. So you know, each of these callings could be, maybe a adventure in itself. But I don't think Beetle Knight is going to be your multi-year game. I would love it if it was. We played it for about a year. But the way that leveling works, there is no leveling in the game. And so the only way that you gain more power is by getting new emblems, which we haven't really talked about, or special items, or other things like that. So I think it's just the right amount of sort of time to resolve some of these conflicts that come up during character creation, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And kind of what turns out a little bit, like I like this feels like a nice middle ground between like the 5e background stuff and with like the OSR, like you get nothing stuff where like you can have some engagement with your character and have a little bit of backstory built in without having to create a whole life story. It's to me exactly what he said, like this feels like as much as I want and it's more than you get with a lot of like more NSR games. So I really like that middle ground. It feels nice.
Cool.
So this is on Kickstarter right now.
Thanks.
Yeah, we're just like, we like your game. Go back it and go back it. It is on Kickstarter right now. It is for Zine Quest. It's got 17 days left. I feel like we've been doing Zine Quest for like 6 years now. Is what it feels like. But there's still like half a month left. There's 17 days to go. When people click the link, which we will provide for them, and they come to Beetle Knight and back this project, what can they expect to get? I know you said at one point like multiple pamphlets or something, but what can you actually get when you back the project?
Yeah, it has grown from even in January when I started planning out the project. At first, it was just going to be a zine, kind of a chunky zine. But as kind of more people came on board with the project, I've split it up into a few different books. So what we have is the core rules. So the quick start is the closest thing you'll see to the core rules. But there's a couple other things that we're going to add, like a new create your character section and procedures for play and like recommendations for arbiters, that sort of thing. So there's that. Then we have the Litterfall World Guide. And Litterfall is the name of the world. Litterfall literally means the leaves that cover the forest floor. And by the way, these first two are going to be risograph printed on the covers on colored paper. And then we're going to get some nice kind of textured paper for the interiors as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. We're working with the Hobos Collective, who you might know.
Oh, Logar. Yeah.
Yep, Logar, yep. And they're starting a new print outfit. And so anyway, I'm working with them on that. But the world guide will also have like story hooks. It has 10 NPCs by Amanda P. And she's great. And then Warren, W.F. Smith from Prismatic Wasteland is going to do some writing for factions. Gods and Powers. I'm just looking at the Kickstarter now. All right, so those are kind of the two core books. Now we have two adventures as well. The Elmroot Glimmer, which I'm writing, which is a point crawl with a dungeon crawl. So I think it'll take you a handful of sessions to complete. It's not done yet. And then what is tentatively called Eggfall, which is by M. Quintanilla, who she did Try the Beetle Milk and now the name of the other one is eluding me.
Language Falls.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I love that one.
The Karen right here.
Also another Karen author. So yeah, and they're doing great stuff. I've seen like the works in progress. Yeah, Fangwitch Falls. I loved Fangwitch Falls. And the style. So I mean, they're already working with beetles and bugs, so it's like right on brand. And then Matthew Morris is actually going to be doing the solo roles. So, and he's started on those. So yeah, that's what you get. In addition, we've actually done all of these stretch goals. And so there's like there'll be more writing, but there'll also be like a bookmark and a rules summary card for players. So that's what you get.
A lot going on.
There's multiple tiers too. And so right now, if you're on a budget, I know Zine Quest is terrible for everyone's wallet.
Painful.
But there's an $8 tier to get all of the PDFs. So it's really cheap. And a lot of people are backing at that level, which is great. Then there's a level for $14, the Litterfall Relic gets you just the core book, the Beetle Knight core rules, and then gets you PDFs of everything else. And then there's a version that you get all the books. And then lastly, there's a t-shirt. There's a tier with all the books and a t-shirt.
So. Oh, we do love a t-shirt, man.
I mean, yeah. I'm leaning back to show the Goblins and Gardens t-shirt that I'm wearing now. But yeah, that cover art, it I think will just look really good as a screen print. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
So I think there's a lot. I think it's enough where if you back it, you'll have, a lot of play out of the system if you
it does
want.
sound like, yeah, there's a lot of legs to this. I do appreciate the all PDF tier because, yes, I feel like Zine Quest, like, I love the idea, but man, it is sure an
Yeah.
expensive time, you know?
Yeah, and
There's some.
I wanted something more affordable, and so that's why I had that $14 tier. Because when you start putting all these books together, like the production costs really, they
Yeah.
really go up. So yeah.
Well, especially with the quality of the book that you're talking about, like risograph printing with like a texture paper inside, that's not the same as just ripping off like a regular zine too. So that's gonna go too as well.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
the
some of these will be kind of your mix-em prints, but I want the core book and the Litterfall guide to have that risograph quality to them, because I just love that.
We were talking about a game last week, and the risograph, it's so pretty, it's so nice, it's so clean, it's really nice. I'm really glad that that's what you went with. And I mean, the list of people that you have on the project is fantastic. And I don't even know if we talked about, like, there's additional art from PR from Perplexing Ruins and Rock Romero too, who are both fantastic artists.
Yeah, I mean, Perplexing Ruins and I—we worked together. Well, he worked, did the illustrations on my very first project that is like this fifth edition project that's only really on Patreon. So, and we've been working together ever since. I've done art for some of his books, and back and forth. So, I always enjoy working with him. And then Roke, we've been talking for a while. We've been wanting to do something together, and this is the perfect opportunity. I really liked Codex R for Troika. The art and that he did is just like awesome. Really, really unique style. And as we're talking about contributors, I do want to shout out Chris Shorb right now, who is the game design editor. I put out a version of Beetle Knight on the NSR Discord this past summer, and I'm like, this is ready. I'm gonna put it out there. And he started just like commenting and giving notes just for free. And I'm like, oh my gosh, can I pay you to do this, please? Because this is so valuable. And he had never done anything like that before, but he really helped like kind of focus the project into something that's more usable. So when you're working on one thing for 2 years, you become blind to like some basics. So it's been really great to have some detailed passes from him. Yeah, I'm still working through his latest round of edits, but they'll make it in there. Be sure.
Hey,
Very cool.
it's always great to have a good editor. And just remember, even editors have editors. So for anyone out there that's creating stuff that doesn't have an editor, it's a good idea to reach out to somebody and have an editor. Very, very, very much so. So obviously we're super excited for this project. Like I'm so like this is actually one of probably my favorite projects that are in Zine Quest right now. Just a lot of it because the mechanics, like again, like just the simple elegance of something that's a little bit different is really exciting to play with. So can't wait for this to come out. But Beetle Knight's got 17 days left on it. What's the future look like for Brooklight Games after this?
Well, in the past, I've done like a crazy clip of creating stuff, and that was too much for me. So, really, what I'm trying to do is like one really high quality project a year. So, Beetle Knight is going to be the big thing for this year. I expect that it will require support going forward. I hope it does for the next few years. So what's coming next? It might be something else for Beetle Knight. I don't really know. Really, I'm just focusing on this right now. I do have another project that I've been cooking for a while, though, for Cairn, and it's like Escape the City, where it's a generated, grid crawl, Except it's through a sort of magical fey forest. So I've like totally destroyed it and built it up from scratch like three different times, one of those projects. But yeah. I don't know, I've called it True Tales. That's the latest name that I've had for it. I don't know. That's about it, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's good to hear that you're putting time into this and hopefully expect more Beetle Knight to come out too, because once again, like this feels like something that it could and should have like a lot of legs,
It could be
maybe
a
like a
thing.
hundred legs or something, like a
Yeah.
centipede. But like, yeah, it feels like it
Like a
could go, and I'm really
centipede.
excited for that.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, we got I'm writing an adventure and I'm writing and coordinating the Litterfall world guide. So like that's gonna really keep me busy. But my goal is to have all this stuff done by the end of the summer and printed in the fall and shipped in the winter. I've done a few things like this. I think that's doable.
Feels very reasonable, which is
Yeah.
nice. And it's nice to see so much of it's done
Yeah.
already too, which is cool. So yeah, like I said, we're obviously excited for Beetle Knight, but anyone listening, especially for the Kieran 5e stuff you've done already, like where can people find the stuff you've already done and where this stuff will be in the future?
I mean, you can just check me out at brooklygames.com. That's Brooklet games. That's a tiny, tiny creek, a tiny brook. I got my itch linked there and my big cartel linked there. There's a big thing that says zines, zines, zines. So yeah, click that. You can find my stuff on the official Cairn store. But it goes out of stock pretty quick there.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, I guess that's it.
Nice. Yeah, I saw the email from the Karen store the other day that said they had restocked some of your stuff or put some new stuff on there. So, and I do want to give a quick shout out too. I know the Hobos Collective, Logar's like press is coming out. It's very, I mean, it's going to be distributing Beetle Knight, but it's also very like pro union, very pro and
Yeah.
very. Very, go check it out, please. Support
Yeah.
them, support the stuff that they're doing. Logar is fantastic, and that I'm really excited what they're doing with that press. But it's cool to see that you're working with them for distribution on that. So just wanted to make sure to shout them out, and we'll make sure to link them as well.
Yeah, they're great. I really like working and just talking with Logar. He's awesome. So yeah.
Yeah. But hey, listen, Jim, thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, obviously we're very excited about this. Can't wait to get it in hand.
Absolutely.
Can't wait to see more Beetle Knight 2, but we really appreciate you being here and letting me like talk at you for a while. So thank you so much for that.
No. Yeah, appreciate you having me on. That was great.
Cool. All right. So as always, the links for everything that we talked about will be in the descriptions below. Our links are next to us and we'll be there too. And that's gonna be us for today. So once again, thank you for being here, and everyone out there, have a nice day. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.